This ice had been slightly thicker in the early part of September, and I assumed that some melting had begun below. Clark had recorded plus temperatures at depths of 150 to 200 fathoms in the concluding days of September. The ice obviously had attained its maximum thickness by direct freezing, and the heavier, older floes had been created by the consolidation of pressure ice and the overlapping of floes under strain. The air temperatures were still low, minus 24.5 degrees Fahrenheit being recorded on October 4th. The movement of the ice was increasing. Frost smoke from opening cracks was showing in all directions during October 6th. It had the appearance in one place of a great prairie fire, rising from the surface and getting higher as it drifted off before the wind in heavy, dark, rolling masses. At another point, there was the appearance of a train running before the wind, the smoke rising from the locomotive straight upwards. And the smoke columns elsewhere gave the effect of warships steaming in line ahead. During the following day, the leads and cracks opened to such an extent that if the Endurance could have been forced forward for 30 yards, we could have proceeded for 2 or 3 miles. But the effort did not promise any really useful result. The conditions did not change materially during the rest of that week. The position on Sunday, October 10th, was latitude 69 degrees 21 minutes south, longitude 50 degrees 34 minutes west. A thaw made things uncomfortable for us that day. The temperature had risen from minus 10 degrees to plus 29.8 degrees Fahrenheit, the highest we had experienced since January, and the ship got dripping wet between decks. The upper deck was clear of ice and snow, and the cabins became unpleasantly messy. The dogs, who hated wet, had a most unhappy air. Undoubtedly, one grows to like familiar conditions. We had lived long in temperatures that would have seemed distressingly low in civilized life, and now we were made uncomfortable by a degree of warmth that would have left the unaccustomed human being still shivering. The thaw was an indication that winter was over, and we began preparations for reoccupying the cabins on the main deck. I had the shelter house round the stern pulled down on the 11th, and made other preparations for working the ship as soon as she got clear. The carpenter had built a wheelhouse over the wheel aft as shelter in cold and heavy weather. The ice was still loosening, and no land was visible for 20 miles. The temperature remained relatively high for several days. All hands moved to their summer quarters in the upper cabins on the 12th, to the accompaniment of much noise and laughter. Spring was in the air, and if there were no green growing things to gladden our eyes, there were at least many seals, penguins, and even whales disporting themselves in the leads. The time for renewed action was coming, and though our situation was grave enough, we were facing the future hopefully. The dogs were kept in a state of uproar by the sight of so much game. They became almost frenzied when a solemn-looking emperor penguin inspected them gravely from some point of vantage on the floe and gave utterance to an apparently derisive, "Nark!" At 7 p.m. on the 13th, the ship broke free of the floe on which she had rested to starboard sufficiently to come upright. The rudder freed itself, but the propeller was found to be athwartship, having been forced into that position by the floe sometime after August 1st. The water was very clear, and we could see the rudder, which appeared to have suffered only a slight twist to port at the waterline. It moved quite freely. The propeller, as far as we could see, was intact, but it could not be moved by the hand gear, probably owing to a film of ice in the stern gland and sleeve. I did not think it advisable to attempt to deal with it at that stage. The ship had not been pumped for 8 months, but there was no water and not much ice in the bilges. Meals were served again in the wardroom that day. The southwesterly breeze freshened to a gale on the 14th, and the temperature fell from 31 degrees Fahrenheit to minus 1 degree Fahrenheit. At midnight, the ship came free from the floe and drifted rapidly astern. Her head fell off before the wind until she lay nearly at right angles across the narrow lead. This was a dangerous position for rudder and propeller. The spanker was set, but the weight of the wind on the ship gradually forced the floes open until the Endurance swung right round and drove 100 yards along the lead. Then the ice closed, and at 3 a.m. we were fast again. The wind died down during the day, and the pack opened for 5 or 6 miles to the north. It was still loose on the following morning, and I had the boiler pumped up with the intention of attempting to clear the propeller. But one of the manholes developed a leak, the packing being perished by cold or loosened by contraction, and the boiler had to be emptied out again. The pack was rather closer on Sunday the 17th. Topsails and headsails were set in the afternoon, and with a moderate northeasterly breeze, we tried to force the ship ahead out of the lead, but she was held fast. Later that day, heavy pressure developed. The two floes between which Endurance was lying began to close, and the ship was subjected to a series of tremendously heavy strains. In the engine room, the weakest point, loud groans, crashes, and hammering sounds were heard. The iron plates on the floor buckled up and overrode with loud clangs. Meanwhile, the floes were grinding off each other's projecting points and throwing up pressure ridges. The ship stood the strain well for nearly an hour, and then, to my great relief, began to rise with heavy jerks and jars. She lifted 10 inches forward and 3 feet 4 inches aft, at the same time heeling 6 degrees to port. The ice was getting below us, and the immediate danger had passed. The position was latitude 69 degrees 19 minutes south, longitude 50 degrees 40 minutes west. The next attack of the ice came on the afternoon of October 18th. The two floes began to move laterally, exerting great pressure on the ship. Suddenly, the floe on the port side cracked, and huge pieces of ice shot up from under the port bilge. Within a few seconds, the ship heeled over until she had a list of 30 degrees to port, being held under the starboard bilge by the opposing floe. The lee boats were now almost resting on the floe. The midship dog kennels broke away and crashed down on the lee kennels, and the howls and barks of the frightened dogs assisted to create a perfect pandemonium. Everything movable on deck and below fell to the lee side, and for a few minutes it looked as if the Endurance would be thrown upon her beam ends. Order was soon restored. I had all fires put out and battens nailed on the deck to give the dogs a foothold and enable people to get about. Then the crew lashed all the movable gear. If the ship had heeled any further, it would have been necessary to release the lee boats and pull them clear, and Worsley was watching to give the alarm. Hurley, meanwhile, descended to the floe and took some photographs of the ship in her unusual position. Dinner in the wardroom that evening was a curious affair. Most of the diners had to sit on the deck, their feet against battens and their plates on their knees. At 8 p.m. the floes opened, and within a few minutes the Endurance was nearly upright again. Orders were given for the ice to be chipped clear of the rudder. The men pulled the blocks out of the way when they had been detached from the floe with the long ice chisels, and we were able to haul the ship's stern into a clear berth. Then the boiler was pumped up. This work was completed early in the morning of October 19th, and during that day the engineer lit fires and got up steam very slowly, in order to economize fuel and avoid any strain on the chilled boilers by unequal heating. The crew cut up all loose lumber, boxes, etc., and put them in the bunkers for fuel. The day was overcast, with occasional snowfalls, the temperature 12 degrees Fahrenheit. The ice in our neighborhood was quiet, but in the distance pressure was at work. The wind freshened in the evening, and we ran a wire mooring astern. The barometer at 11 p.m. stood at 28.96, the lowest since the gales of July. An uproar among the dogs attracted attention late in the afternoon, and we found a 25-foot whale cruising up and down in our pool. It pushed its head up once in characteristic killer fashion, but we judged from its small curved dorsal fin that it was a specimen of Balaenoptera acutostrata, not Orca gladiator. A strong southwesterly wind was blowing on October 20th, and the pack was working. The Endurance was imprisoned securely in the pool, but our chance might come at any time. Watches were set so as to be ready for working ship. Wild and Hudson, Greenstreet and Cheatham, Worsley and Crean took the deck watches, and the chief engineer and second engineer kept watch and watch, with three of the ABs for stokers. The staff and the forward hands, with the exception of the cook, the carpenter and his mate, were on watch and watch, that is, 4 hours on deck and 4 hours below, or off duty. The carpenter was busy making a light punt, which might prove useful in the navigation of lanes and channels. At 11 a.m. we gave the engines a gentle trial turn astern. Everything worked well after 8 months of frozen inactivity, except that the bilge pump and the discharge proved to be frozen up. They were cleared with some little difficulty. The engineer reported that to get steam he had used 1 ton of coal, with wood ashes and blubber. The fires required to keep the boiler warm consumed 1.25 to 1.5 hundredweight of coal per day. We had about 50 tons of coal remaining in the bunkers.